on my way up here this morning thinking, I can't believe it's the first Sunday in September already. And then I was like, wait a second, this is the second Sunday in October or September already. It's crazy how quickly time goes. And I don't know, a couple years ago, I think it's been 2 or 3 years, we started to kind of have a theme for the entire year, which I thought was ambitious because everything we do in our lives now, it pretty much peters out after like 5 minutes, right? And then we're on to the next thing. And so when you're projecting out a year ahead of time, it's always weird. I'm kind of looking at Christmas the following year before we have this year. And so I always wonder how well we're going to... So I don't know where you're at with this. We look at our board every week, and I don't know if you're rolling your eyes like, okay, I get it. But I think we've done a pretty good job of kind of staying with it, learning from new characters. I think the reason that this connects with us this year is that there's so many stories to learn from. And everybody likes a good story. I think if I was to kind of encapsulate the chief goal of the year, what do we hope to accomplish by the time we get through the year? And I know one of the top goals for me is to take all these names that are up here now, and as we enter into September, we're kind of 3/4 almost over the hill. As you look at all these names on the board, What I hope to do as we talk about one of these characters every week is that we humanize them. Because I think it's difficult for us to take the stories that we learned when we were little, in the little cartoon figures and the little books, and we still remember those. And then I think there's a certain level that the characters in the Bible always remain as kind of these cartoon characters. Like, they're not real people in our minds. We would never say that. I mean, yeah, we believe that these are real people. But I think when we study these people, they almost don't seem real. Like, they seem larger than life. And it's hard to see them in the flesh and the blood as actual, real, physical people. Most of the people in the Bible are real, physical people. Their stories are actual people. They've been verified historically. Even non-Christians believe that a lot of those folks, they're real people. And yet there just seems to be difficulty in us empathizing with them. Like seeing that Elijah had hair on his chest. Never thought about that. Trisha, did you think about that ever? I never think about that. I never picture anybody going to the bathroom. But it's hard to picture anybody that just goes through real life. Goes to bed at night. Eats meals. They lived in a long, not another galaxy, but they lived a long time ago in a country far, far away, and yet there's universal truths to being a human. And hopefully, as we're going through this year, you see that. You begin to see them kind of take shape in front of you. And I kind of think that the better the character, the better known the character, the more prominent role that they play in the Bible, and we've been talking about this the last couple of weeks, people like Elijah, Abraham, it's really difficult to see them as real people because they have such a large charisma about them. They seem more like the hero in a movie than they do somebody who'd be sitting along having breakfast with us. And I say all of that to build up this morning. What do you think? We're going to talk about a big character, a little character. I mean, this morning we come to the Apostle Paul. I tried to sprinkle these big characters throughout the year so we weren't coming along them at the same time. But we're tackling some of the big ones the last couple of weeks. And as far as the New Testament goes, there is no one bigger besides Jesus than the Apostle Paul. And when I think about Paul, I don't think about him having nose hairs that needed to be trimmed when he was older. I don't think about him with a bald spot. I don't think about him as a man. I think about him as this figure, right? Even when I close my eyes, I see him as kind of this figure who wasn't a real person. And maybe you're different, because Paul, probably more than anybody else in the Bible, we get kind of an insight into his humanity. Like, it's a little bit easier to picture him as a man because he writes so many letters. Like, so much of the New Testament was written by the Apostle Paul. And Paul has an incredible story to tell. An incredible story to tell. And yet it seems to be just like a cartoon. Like, I mean, is that real? Like, him on the road to Damascus, blinded by the light, scales falling off his... That's not real. Like, that's a fairy tale like. And yet the Bible, as we're going to see, Paul tells his story over and over again as if to reiterate the fact that this really happened to me. Like, this is real life, and Paul was a real guy. And I think it's difficult for us to really empathize with this story because we know it so well, and we think, well, that's Paul. What does Paul's life have to do with my life? We know about his dramatic conversion. We know about everything that's involved with Paul. And so we're going to do our best this morning to try to put flesh and bones and hair on the man Paul. We'll see what happens. We first meet him, and his name's not even Paul. It's Saul, right? We talked about Stephen. Where's Stephen at? We talked about Stephen back around Easter time, I think. I didn't remember that. I had to look it up, right? Stephen around Easter time in Acts chapter 7. And there's this small little verse at the end of chapter 7 where we learn that there was this young man named Saul who was overseeing things. And as the story unfolds, we learn that Saul of Tarsus was kind of like Charles Manson, John William Gacy. He had a reputation, not as a criminal necessarily, but among this young Christian group that was beginning to grow and build among the Jews, they knew about Saul of Tarsus. He was a bad dude. And here he was, Stephen, as we celebrate in church, this great martyr of the Christian faith. In Saul of Tarsus' eyes, he was a villain. And Saul was moved by his vigorous ambition to get right before God. It wasn't a criminal response. It was a, we need to get rid of these Christians and stay true. And it's what makes his story so compelling. When the first Christians begin to be confronted with Saul, who had changed his name to Paul, remember that? His name was changed, and he showed up, and the Christians said, we still know who he is. It's that old saying about putting a lipstick on a pig and you still have a pig. Oh, you can change your name, Paul, but we still know you have blood on your hands. We know you were the guy that was killing Christians. How difficult would that be to have him walk in our church this morning and all of us go, oh yeah, we're good now. No, there was this slow hesitancy about accepting all the questions that we would ask, the people were asking. I mean, did he really change his mind that much? Maybe he's a spy. Maybe he's trying to infiltrate us. So of course there was skepticism. There was skepticism on Ananias' part. When God came and said, hey, I want you to go talk to this guy. I'm not talking to that guy. I know that guy. We know his story well, and it becomes pretty clear as the New Testament unfolds that Paul's story is important, and Paul liked to tell his story. This morning we're going to learn a little bit about stories. It's kind of ironic, really, because Paul is well known for his theology. In a lot of ways, he is the theologian of the New Testament. The book of Romans, Philippians, Ephesians. And yet, it seems as though Paul is pretty averse at sharing not just his theology, but his story. So we know his story pretty well, but I want to read it this morning to get us started in Acts chapter 9. So the story is told in Acts chapter 9, and then it's retold by Paul himself a couple times in Acts. We'll get to that here in a little while, Deb. Acts chapter 9, beginning in verse 1. Meanwhile, Saul was uttering threats with every breath and was eager to kill the Lord's followers. So he went to the high priest. He requested letters addressed to the synagogue in Damascus, asking for their cooperation in the arrest of any followers of the way that he found there. He wanted to bring them, both men and women, back to Jerusalem in chains. He was an ambitious young leader, probably pretty well accomplished, pretty proud of himself for what he had accomplished. He was going out, and what we often forget is that he was on the way to Damascus to go round up these Christians. He wasn't out for a leisurely stroll. He had a mission. As he was approaching Damascus on this mission, a light from heaven suddenly shone down around him. He fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to him, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? Who are you, Lord? Saul asked, and the voice replied, I am Jesus, the one you're persecuting. Now get up and go into the city, and you will be told what you must do. The men with Saul stood speechless, for they heard the sound of someone's voice, but saw no one. Wouldn't you like to talk to those guys a couple weeks later? Saul picked himself up off the ground, but when he opened his eyes, he was blind. So his companions led him by the hand to Damascus. He remained there blind for 3 days and did not eat or drink. Now there was a believer in Damascus named Ananias. The Lord spoke to him in a vision, calling, "Ananias." "Yes, Lord," he replied. The Lord said, "Go over to Straight Street to the house of Judas, and when you get there, ask for a man from Tarsus named Saul." As if he didn't already know who that was. "He's praying to me right now." Imagine Ananias. We try to humanize Saul and Paul for a minute, but let's try to humanize Ananias. Imagine being in this situation. It's funny, the Bible says, yeah, God was just talking to Ananias, and we're going, okay, wait a second, what? God just talked to Ananias and told him very specifically, go talk to this guy? "I've shown him a vision of a man named Ananias coming in and laying hands on him so we can see again." "But Lord," exclaimed Ananias, "I've heard many people talk about the terrible things this man has done to all the believers in Jerusalem." He has a reputation. "And he's authorized by the leading priest to arrest anyone or everyone who calls upon your name." "But the Lord said, go, for Saul is my chosen instrument to take my message to the Gentiles and to the kings, as well as the people of Israel. And I will show him how much he must suffer for my name's sake." So Ananias went and found Saul. He laid his hands on him and said, "Brother Saul, the Lord Jesus, who appeared to you on the road, has sent me so that you might regain your sight and be filled with the Holy Spirit." And instantly something like scales fell from Saul's eyes, and he regained his sight. And then he got up and he was baptized. And after that, he ate some food and regained his strength. Later in Acts 21, when Paul is in Jerusalem, he retells this story again. And then later in Acts 26, when he's before Agrippa, he tells his story again. What we often miss about Paul's story is that he intertwines his personal story with his beliefs and his theology. He didn't get up like some Greek philosopher and just begin talking sophisticatedly as some ivory tower academic. He had a story to tell that was intertwined with the life experience that he had lived. And he was familiar enough with his own story to be able to weave that in and out of God's calling in his life. Now, I know there's probably not a single person in here this morning who thinks that their story is anywhere as credible and impressive as Paul's story. It's one of the struggles that we have when we talk about Paul, is because everybody knows his story so well, and it's dramatic, and it's incredible, and it would make a great movie. And then we compare that to our life story, and we think, yeah, what are we going to say? He got up this morning and went to work. This morning he decided to go to Tim Hortons instead of Krispy Kreme donuts. It was quite a dramatic morning. And in the meantime, Saul is getting baptized and scales are falling off his eyes. And we think, I can't hold a candle to Saul. Some of our lives would make an amazing movie, but most of our lives would make a pretty boring movie. At least I used to believe that. But I don't believe that anymore. As you spend more and more time with different kinds of people, you find out that every single person has an interesting and fascinating story. Now, every movie about their life wouldn't be an adventure story necessarily. Some of our lives are pretty boring. But there's something intriguing about our own story. I mean, as we set out to tackle the Apostle Paul today, I thought we could talk about a million different things, couldn't we? I mean, he did so many things. We could talk about persecution. We could talk about his writings. We could talk about his views of marriage. We could talk about all kinds of things. But the thing that I was drawn to, knowing that we just had a Sunday, is I was compelled by the story that he tells. That he was so in touch with his story. And I think that all of us have a story to tell. And one of the struggles that we have with our faith is that somehow we allow our story of faith and our story of our life to just be kind of disconnected. And our church story is our Sunday morning for 3 hours story. And then our life story is the rest of it. And yeah, I mean, there's some points of connection here or there. But the amazing thing about Paul is that there is no points of connection. They're immersed together. And I think one of the jobs that we have in our faith is to see how our life story is interspersed with God's story. That it isn't like separated at all. That you don't have your work life and your family life and your life of leisure, that all intersects together. And our ability to be able to communicate that to others is at the heart of our mission of the gospel. Maybe you believe me, maybe you don't believe me. I want to take 7 minutes and make the case this morning that you have a story that's worth telling. There's a man named Dave Isay, I-S-A-Y, who had this idea. He's an independent radio producer. And he was compelled to believe that everybody has a story worth telling, not just the flashy celebrities. As a matter of fact, a lot of celebrities have pretty boring lives. Their stories aren't that exciting. Dave Isay believed that everybody had a story to tell and that our culture and society is better and best suited when we're hearing as many of those stories as we can. And so in 2003, he began an organization, a movement called StoryCorps. If you're a big NPR fan, you might have ran across them from time to time. In 2003, he set up a recording studio on Grand Central Station in Manhattan. And he set up partners, two people, to go and interview one another. Just ordinary people. They didn't go searching for the tearjerker stories that they seem to find for American Idol every year. You know, this happened, my mother died, you know, trying to save her child burning in a car, underwater, and it's just crazy stories. These are just ordinary people. And what's amazing is how compelling they are. If you don't believe me, I'm going to make my case, okay? So they have a website, and they take these, they're about 45-minute interviews, and they spruce them down to about 4 or 5 minutes, and they make these little cartoon videos. And I'm telling you, we're going to listen to a 3-minute conversation between two sanitation workers from Manhattan. What in the world could two trash guys have to talk about that would make us stand up and listen? But Deb, go ahead and play this first video, and I want to make the point that everybody has a story to tell. And that does not look like the video that we had queued up. Did you lose it? Okay. Well, we will move on, and I will try to show those here in a little while. I will show those to you in a little while. When you think about the story that you have to tell, if you get caught up thinking that everything worth sharing is dramatic, that the only thing worth talking about is your vacation or your kid's great project or game they won, if you get caught up in that celebrity culture, that idea that everything is bigger than life, then we miss our point. If you guys saw the story this week that was going around about that guy from the Cosby Show that was shamed for working in the grocery store. Like, what a perfect example of what we're talking about. People in the grocery store have just as interesting stories as all of us do. The problem is, and this is what we're getting at this morning, the problem is we're not in tune to listening to each other's stories. We're not in tune to telling one another our stories. Like, we're so used to talking about the weather, or sports, or even politics, but just a little bit, like just a surface. And we never really get down to meaningful and important conversation. I think one of the things that our world is starved for, and certainly our younger children and teenagers and college students, are starved for meaningful, in-depth conversation that tells them that they matter, that there's something larger in our world going on than what they're used to kind of spending all their time talking about. That's why when I came across StoryCorps, I thought, what an interesting idea. They've met all over the world and just had people sit down and interview each other. And one of the ways they interview each other is they have a kind of a moderator that just kind of helps them have questions that they can ask one another that are helpful. That are meaningful, because as you know, when you talk to people, that all conversations are not the same. And so I'll find it here in a minute. Well, what I want to do this morning is I want us to take a few minutes and have some significant conversations with each other. Last night, Mary Beth and I were over at some friend's house, and it was interesting because over the course of the night, we were there for a couple hours, we talked about politics, we talked about race, big conversations that are happening in our world. We talked about God. Talked about whether God exists, whether prayer works, whether prayer matters. And it's interesting because any time, and we didn't go with a Bible study. We didn't come in saying, hey guys, the preacher's here. Do you guys want to talk about prayer tonight? It just came up. Now, the more you relate to somebody, the longer your history goes back, because we all have different layers, and we're only willing to go so close, so in personal with our layers, depending on how well we know someone, right? Like, nobody wants to meet a stranger and have them just confess their deepest, darkest secrets the moment you meet them. It takes a while, and it's the way it should be. We're guarded. And so as we do this morning, depending on who you partner up with, you may be a little bit reluctant to pull back a certain number of layers. But what I want to do this morning for a few minutes is I want you to find a partner. This is the time where you get uncomfortable and have to find a partner and all that kind of stuff. But I want to make the case that everybody, no matter your age, no matter how much money you make, no matter what your vocation is, no matter how much education you've had, none of that stuff matters. Everybody has a story that's worth telling. And I think that what we're in the business of doing as Christians is trying to make sense of our stories. Trying to make sense of where our stories are leading, where God is in our story. Because I'm afraid that there's a lot of Christians who are out of touch with God in their own story. That they just kind of live their life and do their things, and whether it's the American dream or their family or whatever that they're caught up in, and they fail to see how God is at work in their lives. That's what Paul does. Paul tells his story. Now, maybe, or I'm assuming not, none of us have had this great moment where God just flash bangs right in front of them and boom, it's a really easy story to tell. But it gets back to what we've been talking about all along. Every story is not going to be significant to the point where you have a Paul. Not everybody's a movie star, a celebrity. Some people are sanitation workers in New York. It looks like you got it queued up. Is that it, Brian? Listen to this amazing story. Yeah, it's like a 30-second intro. I couldn't figure out a way to... But give the people their props for making the cartoon there. Good job, Roche Brothers. Bill Ray, very well done. Rafael Rosado, love the storyboard. I mean, two garbage truck guys, and half of you are about to cry. Just listening to their story, just an everyday story about two old codgers. I love their accent. Like, Pat missed out. This video was for Pat Maker feel at home. Did you get the other one, Brian, too? Let's listen to this. This is even greater. All right, so this is a mother interview. Her son has Asperger's. I think he's a teenager. He has Asperger's, and he's interviewing his mother. Listen to this. It's hilarious and tear-jerking all at the same time. got you, brother. I mean, come on, this is just an ordinary conversation between two people. Nothing special. We don't know anything about this woman or her son. And yet there's just something about sharing your story with someone and listening to what's beneath the veneer. And to me, that's the legacy of Paul. Paul gets up and he stands before people and he doesn't say, you know, you need to believe in God because of this and this and this and this, and you don't know anything about baptismal regeneration or justification or any of these other things that he writes about in his letters. Instead, he just tells them his story. You guys won't believe what's happened to me. And then he goes on. And I know that we don't all have Paul's story, but we have our own story, and God has intended our story to be ours, not Paul's. And I think there's a knack, and that's what I say found out, is that there's a knack to learning how to tell our story. And as Christians, we have an important, compelling story to tell. If you feel uncomfortable or overwhelmed by trying to figure out how you're going to talk to somebody about Christ, you don't feel like an evangelist, well, let me tell you something. You're not supposed to go beat them over their head with a Bible. You just tell them how God is working in your life. There should be times in our life when people come to us and say, what do you have in your life that I don't have? Because there's something missing and I can see it. And the opportunity is there to share our story. And so I put it off long enough. I told you I was going to make you uncomfortable. So I asked you when I got up here earlier for you to think about a couple questions. And I want us to just take a minute and find a partner. So go ahead and stand up and find somebody that's not related to you. That's my only criteria. Find a partner that you can talk to about a couple things. These radio interviews, so we got these 3 and 4 minute videos. They take 45 minutes and then kind of shrink it down. So we're just going to take like 5. But go ahead and get up. Find somebody. Find somebody older than you, younger than you, different than you. Don't ask them how old they are unless you know them really well. Right? Just don't get off on the wrong foot here. I'll give you a minute, and I want you to either discuss one of two questions. And they're kind of deeper questions. I want you to talk about the most spiritual moment in your life, or whichever you want to do. If you feel a little bit easier to talk about, if you were to see God today, what would you want to ask Him? Or what would you want to talk to Him about? One of those two things help facilitate your discussion. Hopefully everybody's got someone they can talk to. If you need to have a group of 3, that's fine. Somebody goes bail out Ron Cole. He's really uncomfortable in these settings. Help him find somebody. I sometimes wonder if church is not supposed to look more like this all the time. I don't know how you get there, but I hope you had some meaningful and significant conversations. Sorry to cut it a little short, but I want to be mindful of our time. Hopefully this has been fruitful for you. I know Ron and I went up with Deb and had a few minutes to talk, and it is amazing that if we provide the platform, if we provide the opportunities, how quickly we can engage in meaningful conversations with people that we... And I will admit, depending on your personality, this may be easier. I'll go ahead and tell you, this is easier for me than it is for a lot of people. This is what I do. But it doesn't warrant us to say, well, it's just hard for me to have those kind of conversations. No. The more in touch we are with our own story, the more powerful of a witness we'll be to God. I mean, it's pretty simple. The more in touch we are with our own stories, the more powerful of a witness we will be to God. All the things that we sing about when we get together in church, all the things that we talk about and read about in Scripture, I mean, when does it really come up as a matter of life or death, as a matter of life? It's in our lives. I mean, it's not like this is a little capsule of reality and then we step out of it all the time. Instead, we live in reality, we come here, we're kind of given our anchor, we're given kind of our direction, we're kind of reminded of where we're coming from, and then we go back into our lives. And the better in tune we are with how our story is in concert with God's story, because that's ultimately what we want, right? We want our story to be in concert with God's story. That's what the testimony of all these people, almost all of them, are, how to live our lives, go in the same direction as God's life, so that they're mutually edifying. And hopefully, our church does that together, that we encourage our children, our seniors, our everybody in between, to find their story. I didn't know what to talk about when it came to Paul, but it seemed to me the more time I spent with him, the more his story seemed to kind of rise to the surface of, this is what really matters. I love the story in Acts 17 when he goes into Athens. Because he does start to pontificate a little bit more in Athens. But he's never very far removed from his own life setting. I think one of the challenges for Christians is that we too easily give up our own story for someone else's, whether it's a famous author or a famous preacher, or not a famous preacher, but your preacher or your great aunt that was really, really significant, and whatever it is, but we give up our own story as if it's not significant. And that's why I wanted you to see the video of the trash guys. And not that they were pontificating about their faith, but it was just a reminder that, man, everybody's story matters. No matter where you work, no matter where you're coming from, if you get the right questions and you start engaging in the right dialogue, it's amazing how well that you can get to know each other and relate on a heart-to-heart and soul-to-soul level, which I think is what brotherhood, sisterhood in Christ is all about. I hope this experience has been important and helpful for all of us. I know some of you probably went out of your comfort zone more than others, but this is what it means to be family. Talk about being a family of Christians together. As we wrap it up, I'd invite you to stand and sing with us as we close it out here. Hopefully you'll be able to stay around for classes. We'll start shortly.